Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
I guess it's been a few weeks I've been talking and sort of teasing this broadcast we're going to do about atheism and arrogance, you know, the arrogant, egotistical atheist. This is a charge we often hear. It's sort of designed as a conversation stopper sometimes when you're in a dialogue with a religious person and they're like, well, how arrogant must you be to declare that God does not exist? Who do you think you are? Or you just want to be God, or something along those lines. It's a redirect around any direct questions or concerns or criticisms we might have about specific religious claims, and they just look at us and they make it personal. Well, how arrogant, how cocky, how egotistical. Of course, then we just sort of raise an eyebrow at many of them and say, hang on just a second. You're the one who believes that you are important enough to be adopted by the most powerful being in the universe for the purpose of a divine crusade for which you will receive an eternal reward, and that the universe was essentially created with you in mind, and you're calling us arrogant. Well, I'm going to put that show topic off a little bit, partially because I think most of us already know where that conversation's going to lead. We've been down those roads, we've had those conversations, and I'm not sure I want to wrap a whole show around that specific topic. The more I sat down to prepare the broadcast, the more I found my own mind wandering, and I thought, well, shit, if it's happening to me, it might be happening to our listeners. So let me think about it. Maybe we can frame it in an interesting way. But instead of talking about atheism and arrogance today, I want to talk about Star Wars. And I rounded up a great group of people. Some are known activists you may already be aware of, like No Illusions of the Scathing Atheist podcast and Brian Fields. He's the president of Pennsylvania Nonbelievers. Plus some other listeners and viewers who just joined us on Google Hangout to weigh in and sound off. And there is video of this exchange. If you want to watch it, you can just click the video, the YouTube link in the description box of this show. You will hear spirited discussion, strong opinions, and in case you're one of the five people who hasn't seen it, be warned, there's a ton of spoilers. And the conversation begins in just a second. Hang on. I was 9 years old back in 1977. My father says, hey, son, would you like to go see Star Wars? Well, duh, of course I would. And as this sort of trite, cliched story has been replayed in the childhoods of so many other people, I went and it changed my life. And so obviously, you know, episodes 4, 5, and 6 were huge for me, despite the Ewoks. Then, of course, we go through the big prequel dust up. And I'm going to save that for whenever we sort of organically get into it in the conversation here on Google Hangout with just a multitude of skeptics who wanted to chime in. And then, of course, sort of the reinvention of Star Wars or bringing back some of the main characters for The Force Awakens and then The Last Jedi. And so I've seen great reviews for The Last Jedi. I had a good time at The Last Jedi, but I have noticed it is a hugely polarizing film. And so I'm just going to have a free-for-all as we gather together as skeptics to talk Star Wars. First of all, I'm going to start with Brian Fields. Brian, what's your take on The Last Jedi? Yay, nay, in between, what?
I loved it. I thought it was on the order of Empire and quality. I thought it was necessary. And I thought that from the story that was started with The Force Awakens, the way the storyline had to go in order to breathe life into a new generation of Star Wars fans, I think it was absolutely perfect and spot on.
No Illusion's about to come out of his chair over there. He's about to spontaneously combust over there.
Let me give the counterpoint here. I certainly wouldn't put it on the rank of Empire Strikes Back. Now, I will give Rian Johnson a little bit of credit because it's hard to follow J.J. Abrams. He has this tendency to create mystery that he has no idea how to resolve and is unresolvable. See Lost. So I recognize that it was a difficult task that he was up to, but I just found the movie profoundly boring. I didn't connect to any of the characters, really. There were like maybe a couple action sequences that you know, woke me up here and there. But the movie seemed convoluted. It was disjointed. I don't know that I could identify a plot. I don't think I could find an inciting incident, rising action, climax. I guess I could find a denouement, but that'd be the only spot in the Freitag pyramid that I feel like it really hit. So, you know, I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, it ruins the lore. It does this. It does that. I'm not really worried about all of that. I was just bored to tears from basically the beginning of the movie when the opening crawl seemed to be trying to make the word count.
Patricia, did you like the film? Not like the film?
I kind of liked most of it. When I was sitting in the theater, I found myself wondering when it was going to be over. And to me, that's not a good sign when I'm watching a movie. So there were parts where I was overcome with emotion and really loved what was going on. And then there were other bits where I was wondering when it was going to be over and what the next part was going to be.
Well, my perspective is a little different. My husband's English and my daughter is Scottish and I'm American. So we do discuss our different perspectives.
Who liked the film and who didn't in your family?
I liked the film. My daughter liked the film. My husband did not like the film.
Did he say why?
Remind me, Matt, what did you say specifically? I'm sorry.
It's the same old boring rubbish.
He says, it's the same old boring rubbish. I don't know if you could hear him over there.
Yeah. We could hear him over here.
Yeah, he just thought it was the same storyline, different characters. You know, the good battling the evil.
But you went with it. You enjoyed yourself.
I did quite enjoy it. Yeah, it was just entertaining. It was nice. And I think because I have an adult perspective now as opposed to when I was a child watching all of the first Star Wars, it just feels different to me now. And it's more entertaining as I get older.
One of the criticisms I hear is Poe is not a strong character. Thoughts, anybody?
I don't think he should be. I mean, he's young. He just got involved in the rebellion or resistance. As far as storytelling goes, I think one of the flaws in the earlier Star Wars films is how many of the younger, inexperienced characters all of a sudden had mountains of battle experience and understanding of what it takes to, you know, actually carry out the rebellion. I think that's a weak point in the earlier Star Wars films. And I think that it was well inverted in The Last Jedi.
Anybody else who has not had a chance yet and want to chime in? I see Frank and Joe and maybe one or two others.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think that there are parts that I liked and there are parts I didn't like. I thought that the humor, while it was funny, seemed a little forced. You know, right at the beginning, they hand Luke the lightsaber and what does he do? He tosses it over his shoulder.
Actually, that scene, I felt cheated because, after this moment and you see the big helicopter shot at the end of The Force Awakens and you feel like it's this poignant moment, and even if he rejects it, it's going to be a moment of real gravitas. And instead, he just flippantly chucks it over his shoulder. And it's it's one of the parts of the films that I felt rang totally false.
That and I think they could have done a little more with Poe Dameron. It seems like they could have filled in a little backstory with him.
I've got Tyler and Frank,
yo,
who've been patient, and Caleb. Any of you guys want to jump in, or all three want to have it out? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're undercutting Poe. He was practically the main antagonist of this film because he contributed to the deaths of like 90% of the rebellion on this one. the bombers on a run that got them all killed. And then he contributed to feeding the rebellion's secret plan to the bad guys.
So essentially he was Superman from the Zack Snyder films, the hero that caused the death of masses of human beings.
I mean, I'm against the death penalty, but if I was in charge there, I would have had him shot. Because he had a fucking mutiny. Like, right in the middle of that shit.
And, now, I like the idea of a mutiny, though. I mean, you know, instead of the rebellion being this sort of pristine, you know, the heart of gold type of thing, you know, I like some inner conflict. I totally get that. I actually kind of like the guy. I don't even know his name, the actor who plays Paul.
Oscar Isaac.
I like him. You know, he's a likable guy.
He's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. If you've ever seen Inside Llewyn Davis, that's a real tour de force for him.
The Coen Brothers film, it's one of the few Coen Brothers films I haven't seen. What's it about? Is it?
It's about a folk singer. Yeah, he's the antagonist. Well,
that's why I haven't seen it. Yeah,
yeah. It's a pretty convoluted movie, but it's worth it just for John Goodman's performance in it. Honestly,
No Country for Old Men, favorite Coen and Big Lebowski.
Well, of course.
I love Poe, and I am so glad that they saved him because he was originally supposed to die in the Force Awakens script. And they just loved Oscar Isaac so much that they rewrote it so that he lives. And I'm so glad that he was able to join us for another film because I really enjoyed him in this movie.
I kind of agree that Poe kind of needed to be slapped around a little bit more. My dad went to the Naval Academy, so any scene with a mutiny and it kind of rubs him the wrong way. I was actually kind of waiting for Admiral Holdo to just slap him down and be like, "Hey, Captain, don't you have something better to do than stand on my bridge and tell me what to do?" Wasn't it Leia's last act to demote you for that bombing run that kind of screwed us over?
Weird seeing Carrie Fisher in that role, knowing it was like, you know, this is it, right? And then wondering if they're going to attempt this sort of digital continuation and hoping they won't. I don't know. Do you guys feel that whenever she appeared on screen, it's like the death of a friend, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit. I kind of felt like, how are they going to write her off after this? You know what I mean? Are they going to then the next crawl, Princess Leia is dead or something?
She got sucked out into space, I thought, well, okay, that's how they're going to do it. You know, we actually did a broadcast, I don't know, it was a year or two ago, about some of the weird questions we've always asked ourselves. One is, can you really survive in space? This, I think, was prompted by that scene in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where they're floating in space and they can survive for 30 seconds. And I thought it was total bullshit. But apparently, the human body can survive for like a little less than a minute in space. It still sounds wrong to me. But I don't know. What were your thoughts on, you know, the Leia floating in space thing and all of a sudden the hand moves and the force and all that stuff? Thoughts, anybody?
I bought that she used the force because she is force sensitive. She's talked to Luke using the force. This is, you know, the original trilogy all the way back. We know she can use the force. She's force sensitive. Now, whether she can have advanced to that point in using the force, I don't know. But if I was about to die and being sucked out into the vacuum of space and the whole galaxy is depending on me and I have to pull some force moves out of my ass, that's the time that I would do it.
If I read it in a book, I think I would have loved it. The visual was a little too silly, though, right? Like, the visual of it kind of made it almost a humorous moment.
I just thought it was kind of weird that, she wasn't even finished coming through the door, and when she actually got back into the ship, she wasn't even finished getting in, and they were already opening the door to pull her back in. I was like, yeah, just expose the whole ship to vacuum.
It's decompressed the entire thing. Were there ice crystals all over her body? I don't even remember if they were or not.
Yeah,
but
yeah, there were.
And it took her this long to finally be able to use the force properly?
Well, on camera. I mean,
yeah, we don't know how she's getting her hair done and whatnot. She could be doing her hair with
I mean, look, what? There's 30 years between the films, right? So
no, that's true.
There's 30 years of story that we don't have. I thought it was pretty satisfying for the first time. I mean, we all knew that Leia was strong in the force. To see her actually use it for something. And, you know, I mean, some people, I've seen people refer to it as cheesy or, you know, whatever, but the Force is a Deus Ex Machina. It is what it is, you know, so.
Right, but they've managed throughout the other movies to present the Force without it coming across quite so so goofy.
I don't know about that. I mean, I'd say throughout the films, the Force has been used in pretty extreme ways. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that that's just another representation of what we've already seen.
All right, we're talking about weird Force powers. Let's talk about Luke's guy. This is a spoiler fest. I've got a disclaimer at the front. If you haven't seen it by now, I have no sympathy for you. So Luke Skywalker projects himself for the last 20 minutes of the film using Force power. That's a new one. Did that ring true or false with you guys?
Well, they had been setting it up through the movie, I think, with Adam Driver and Daisy Ridley seeing each other with the Force. So I think that there was a fairly good current underneath it to sort of explain that away by the time you got to it.
I loved, I mean, and this is something I didn't catch when I was watching the movie, but I read reviews later. I loved how, if you go back and watch that scene, there are clues on screen that Luke isn't actually there, you know, and I kind of love that they shot that out to the audience and they made it available for you to smack yourself in the face when you go to watch it again.
Mark Hamill initially came out after The Last Jedi had released and said, this is not my Luke Skywalker. My guy would have been more proactive. And then he came back and sort of retracted those and softened those. That's probably my one regret. I really enjoyed it. I thought he was fantastic in it. But I sure would like to have seen a little bit more of a proactive instead of a reactive Luke Skywalker for The Last Jedi.
Such as a proactive Yoda in Empire or...
I mean, I think I agree that he would have. I get he's the master. I get that he has angst. I get all that. But I just think if he knew his sister and the rebellion were all what do they call themselves? Thank you.
Resistance.
Yeah. Empire.
Totally for sure.
I had a hard time buying it. It would take him that long to have his moment of epiphany where he was going to become a proactive sort of engager, if that's a word, in the conflict.
I thought it was pretty cool that he was a hologram at the end.
So you bought that. You bought the whole climax with him.
I did. Although when I first saw him at that last scene where he came in, I looked at my husband. I said, he's a hologram. I caught it straight away. I don't know why, because I just thought he's never going to go there physically. So yeah, I did catch it as the scene started. And in that sense, I don't like to be able to predict things. So I was a little disappointed that I had guessed it.
I love Mark Hamill. I'm glad to see him finally on screen and doing what he does. The guy's just a badass, amazing actor who has been underappreciated for the last 30 years because he was pigeonholed as this young Skywalker.
I agree with that. And whether or not it's true to the Luke character, because, you know, like, yeah, apparently the Jedi way is when the going gets tough, you go to some deserted island and hide out like a la Yoda or Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I guess that works. But then the question is, why am I rooting for him as a hero then? Right. If he's not proactive enough to save his sister.
Because he's not the hero. He's not supposed to be the hero.
Well, right. But he's supposed to be a good guy. He's not the villain for him.
Well, I know. But I mean, it seems by the time we've gotten to The Last Jedi that finally we're having a film with characters with nuance instead of black and white hero villain.
I think where he ended up was exactly correct. Like, for him to have been through everything that he was through, you know, from A New Hope to Return of the Jedi, like, obviously that's some epic shit. But then you don't know what happened between then and when he ended up on that island. But you have to imagine that, like, he's the legend and everybody meets him and they're all like, oh my gosh, you're Luke Skywalker. You've got to be the best. So he's got like tremendous pressure on him and he sees the uprising of the First Order and he sees his, you know, his Padawans, I guess you could call them. He sees, you know, Kylo Ren fail him. So, you know, he actually fails Kylo Ren, excuse me, so terribly that it probably was just crushing for him. I mean, he is like literally the last Jedi. That's the way that Force Awakens opens. Like the crawl says, Luke Skywalker, comma, the last Jedi. So that's a lot of pressure. And I would think he's really human, and it makes sense. Just because he's a Jedi doesn't mean he's a god of some sort.
I actually read an article recently that it was someone described Luke's descent into angst as kind of ringing true for his struggle with mental health. I think that when Luke said like, you know, he came here to die, he bought into the legend of Luke Skywalker a little bit too much himself, and then he messed up. I think that rang the most true to me in the movie. Just a, oh crap, I fucked up. Do I even come back? Well, like, can I make this better, or will my becoming involved just mess it up even more? And could I live with myself, you know, after that if I make it worse? I think that wanting to go off into a deserted island and just disappearing, you know, makes sense, particularly in the context of, well, I thought about murdering my nephew, just because I think I saw the dark side creeping up on him, and then he saw me about to kill him, and then that just started the whole thing.
My favorite thing is that Luke Skywalker used the Force to project himself to the battlefield. That was the best. And I heard a review by Kevin Smith, the director, and he said that he wished that Luke could be there physically and pull out some, you know, wicked lightsaber moves like a la Yoda versus Count Dooku. But I think it's way, way more epic to show up as a hologram and fool everyone. I know he didn't fool Leia, but he fooled Kylo Ren. And that moment when he realizes that he's not physically there was just, that was an epic moment. I love that moment.
Yeah, I thought that Luke's sacrifice as a scene, it just makes me really angry how foolish it plays out. If you stop and think about what he's trying to do as a plan, you run into a lot of problems. Like, why doesn't he bother telling anybody in the Resistance, like, hey, I'm going to go distract them. You guys escape.
Right.
Or how he even knows that there is an opportunity for them to escape, which there wasn't really exactly. How does he know that him walking out there is even going to delay them? What if the fake Empire says, hey, it's just one guy, keep moving, don't stop? Like, it would have just fallen apart completely. And yeah, the more you think about it, the more you realize it's a scene designed to show something, but like, you're not really supposed to think about it at all, because then right. It falls apart.
I
don't agree with that. I mean, you know, Luke knows that Kylo Ren is there. He knows he's there to confront Kylo Ren. He knows that Kylo Ren is nominally in charge of what's going on. I think it's plausible.
No, but how does he know that Kylo Ren is there?
Well, you know, one of my big one of my big issues with that whole bit is you've got Luke Skywalker. He shows up. You've got all the AT-ATs or AT-ATs. I guess there's an alternate pronunciation on that. We already know. Could we at least get Luke to be badass here? Could we at least have him like rip the legs off of one of those with his Force telekinesis and throw it into another one? I mean, you know, okay, cool. He Neos under a lightsaber for a second and everything. But even then, when they finally give him this heroic moment, they really don't do much with it.
Luke is a Force projection there. How does that work?
I'm sorry. Is there are there rules to this?
I don't know. But I mean, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I remember from the film is that Luke doesn't really change his environment at all.
But Snoke does earlier in the film.
But the thing is that you are retroactively establishing that rule based on what you saw.
Well, right. So if we'd seen him, we establish rules based on what we observe.
Well, right. But you're trying to use that rule that you observe post facto as an argument that you can't insert that beforehand, right? So if you observed him ripping a leg off of the AT-AT, then you'd say, well, yes, I guess that's something you can do with a Force projection. So the argument itself just doesn't hold logically.
I don't know. I mean, from what I'm I would presume that from the fact that none of his environment was affected by his presence while he was
right, there. Right, again, but if it was written differently, then some of his environment would have been. You see what I'm saying? Like that was
well, the choice if that the some environment had been affected, then at that point, I think it'd be reasonable to say, why didn't he rip the legs off of the attic?
Well, I'm just saying, why didn't he do it in terms of that would have been a cooler ending, not, you know, let's get into the biology or physics of how the force works. Again, this is something that the writer is establishing. So the writer could have gone any way he wanted to go there. He chose to go a less interesting, less, you know, visually exciting way.
I think it would be a lot more boring movie if the writers had inserted a scene where Luke stood there and explained to everybody exactly what powers he had and how it should work and all that.
Well, no one is suggesting that. I think
it showed a lot more faith in the audience to take inference from the behavior around the scene.
You're missing my point so far, so much that I feel like you're doing it deliberately at this point.
All right, take one last crack at it, Noah, to make sure that everybody understands.
Well, I think I've made the point to where everyone else understands what I'm saying, which is, you know, you didn't go into this with de facto rules about how a force projection of Luke Skywalker would work. You could have gone however you wanted with that. And, you know, like I said, just it's one of the many points I feel like in the movie where they
I guess what you're saying is you really wanted him to rip the legs off the AT-AT. I mean, that I guess is what you're saying.
What's that?
I guess what you're saying is you just really wanted him to rip the legs off the attic.
Well, I wanted him to do something cool and visually interesting.
If I can jump in, I can't shake that even 30 years on, Skywalker is still a physical character. You know, he certainly is a cerebral character to a degree, but I'd like to have seen him more involved in the story in a physical way instead of just the cerebral talking about the Force, going through his angst. And I think what Noah might be trying to say wouldn't have been, it'd have been nice to see him more physically involved in the environment, the good versus evil struggle, making him a greater hero character. You don't have to necessarily make him a Michael Bay film to do that, right? You don't have to make him a cookie cutter, but I mean, am I close, Noah? No?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that just speaks to again, this isn't a problem that I have with Luke Skywalker or his portrayal in the movie. It's a problem I have with the movie all in all. They had a number of times where they could have given you something way more visually interesting than what they gave you, and they chose to, for whatever reason, often dial it back or do very little.
I think the movie wasn't about Luke. It wasn't about Leia Organa. It wasn't about any of the old generation characters. The movie was about giving the new generation their legs and finding their way rather than focusing the action and the energy on the old generation or on the new, on the old generation.
I will say Rey is one of my favorite characters in film. Period for the last like half decade. She is fantastic. And what I appreciated, I really did enjoy The Last Jedi. I appreciated the fact that they didn't make some ham-handed attempt to bring Han Solo back because I was waiting, right? Because I was like, they're going to try something, right? They're going to pull a Spock. He's going to come back or he's going to appear via the Force, which will feel totally false. They didn't do any of that. They didn't have a planet-sized Death Star thing. Although, what was the, Noah, what was that was it a dreadnought? What was it called?
Yeah.
Some big.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty cool. And you know, I will say, I've seen a lot of people complain about like that scene where the bombs fall in outer space and that kind of stuff. I'm like, guys, it's Star Wars and the original trilogy. Things were catching on fire in outer space, so you can't really apply that kind of stuff to Star Wars. But so I'm willing to suspend my disbelief for that. I thought actually that was the strongest scene in the movie, the opening scene there.
You guys, how many thoughts on the big, the space Vegas, the space casino? Anybody?
Oh, so bad.
I think that was the one weak point of the movie. I think I would agree. That was the one weak point of the movie.
That was a really ham-handed way of doing it.
It's not that I wasn't interested in it. It just didn't feel like it was part of the same story. It wasn't as epic and as interesting as everything else that was going on with Rey and Holdo and Poe and all the other characters that were in the story.
I think that a large part of the movie was highlighting the new generation of characters trying to solve problems and not really having the best solutions. And I think that's why the casino was probably part of it. But by the same token, I think that the sequence could have been edited to be much shorter and the movie would have still been strong for it.
I honestly think it could have been edited out altogether. It's not like it really, I mean, you needed something for Finn to do in the story and you needed something for Rose to do. So I get that that's sort of what they were going for, but I feel like you wouldn't have lost a thing if that whole segment of the movie had gone, and then it would have come in under 2 hours. It would have been a lot easier to sit through.
Anybody else?
I was really bothered by the part where she took the space horse at, when she's about to get captured, and I can't remember what she does exactly. She takes the reins off of it or something, and she says, "Now it matters," as though that's making a big difference. And I just wanted to like stop the movie and be like, "Lady, you realize you're fighting against an enemy that destroyed 4 inhabited planets simultaneously in the last one, right? Like this one space horse. Like, let's get a little perspective, okay?"
Well, what my thinking was, she was what, within, you know, 2 clicks of the place where the animal was rescued. And I'm like, well, they're just going to go corral these beasts. Yeah, right. Back.
I thought they kind of wasted Benicio del Toro. I mean, I kind of thought he needed a little bit more to do.
Props for not doing the reveal, though, where he had the symbol or the brooch or whatever it is they were looking for at the end of the film. I mean, they may yet try to pull that, but I was waiting for, oh, they didn't get the wrong guy who turns out to be the right guy. We didn't exactly go there, but did you buy him in the role?
Yeah, I bought him in the, role. I thought the weird accent rather than the stutter kind of struck a little bit too much of Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor, but... I thought he worked. I liked his character. I just wish he had more to do is all. I mean,
it seemed like something they were setting up for use in the next movie. I thought.
I agree. Yeah. And I think, when Empire came out, you couldn't really judge Empire until Jedi came out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for people who didn't like this movie or didn't like where some of the story threads go, I kind of want to see it in context with the next movie.
He brought up the, I like Space Horse. I think I'm going to make a note of that and use it in future conversations. What about the little cutesy critters in the Millennium Falcon used to sell Disney toys? Anybody, I mean, yes, no? Are they the Ewoks of 2017, or did you buy them?
Well, we have puffins near us, and they are a bit puffin-like. So in that aspect, I thought they were kind of cute, but... our puffins are much cuter than those little creatures. So they look like ugly versions of the puffins that we see all the time here.
I love the Chewbacca with the roasted one.
Yeah. I feel bad for Chewbacca. He looked really hungry in that scene.
Did.
See, I thought at first they were doing really well, you know, when it was just, they were just on the island and they just happened to be an animal that lived on the island. I thought, okay, so they made Rian Johnson throw in the cutesy thing and he didn't go overboard with it. I thought that Chewbacca scene was a little too silly for my taste, but I get, you know, it is a kid's movie. So sure. Give the kids something to laugh at. And I'm all of you, I'm not trying to belittle your sense of humor there or anything, but then once you get Chewbacca off the island and then you've got him just running around like Larry Curly and Moe on the Millennium Falcon, I was done with it by then.
I like them in small bits. And then the more they were used, the more annoyed I was. So, but then I learned later that there were like indigenous puffins on the island that they were trying to like edit around. And then they realized, oh, we'll just use them. So they digitally altered them to make them look like porgs. And that kind of softened me on them just a little bit, but I still find them really annoying.
I just don't know that I've heard George Lucas say that he made the movies for kids. I don't think so. I mean, I think he made them for adults, and their universal appeal includes kids. I don't know. Am I trying too hard there? I mean, is it really a kid's movie?
I think the franchise has grown up quite a bit over the years. But I mean, if you look at the original Star Wars, I think, you know, I think that was clearly aimed at, you know, like 12, 13, 14.
I mean, that was his excuses for the prequel films. He said, oh, I made them for kids. That's Jar Jar. That's
oh,
all.
Yeah.
Right. So it was all, these are all for kids. And there's a great documentary. It's called The People versus George Lucas, which documents the sort of avant-garde, cutting edge creator, storyteller, filmmaker in the 1970s, the guy who created American Graffiti and defied all the odds. And then he just sort of became this corporation. And he became so autonomous that no one else was giving him any creative input. And he just went totally off the rails. And made this soulless, Brian, the prequels are soulless pieces of space garbage. I know you like them. No, go ahead, Brian. Tell me you like.
I knew coming into this that I was going to hear about this. So
come on, tell me what is it? The characters, no. The acting, no. The storytelling, no. I didn't even really buy the special effects. They're everywhere, but it just feels like I'm watching, you know, a Nintendo. I'm not connecting at all with the material. Tell me how you can defend the prequels.
Okay, so first of all, I would say that Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith are good movies in their own right. Revenge of the Sith better than Attack of the Clones, certainly. I in my original post, I pulled out Phantom Menace and said it's a good movie. I liked the movie. Did I just freeze up, or is somebody?
No. It was
okay.
It was this. It was this. The look of disbelief and stunned silence that you were perceiving.
But before I continue, I will concede Jar Jar sucks, and I will concede midichlorians is stupid. I'm fine with that. But I'm also fine with accepting that out and saying that I like the movie.
Well, you know, I'll say I have at least a few kind words to say about the prequels. I mean, Darth Maul was probably the best villain, you know, sans Darth Vader in the series. Duel of the Fates was the best lightsaber battle in any of the movies, I think. Although I will say I thought the one in the big set piece one in The Last Jedi actually did give it a run for its money. I thought that was a really good scene. And I thought that the final movie in the series, it was overlong, and it was taking itself way too seriously in the third act. But I thought all in all, that was pretty close to a good movie.
I just felt like Lucas undid all of the conceptions, the mental conceptions we had about the young Anakin in Star Wars in 4, 5, and 6. You know, when you see the old Obi-Wan Kenobi off in the desert and he's talking to young Luke about he was a good friend, you know, the child murderer who wasted a dozen young Padawans with a lightsaber. I just, you got little Jake making C-3PO in his bedroom. What the fuck? How do you jive that with the rest of the chronology? It just made no sense to me. I thought this man is undoing his own creation.
We often, when we see movies that have an iconic monster figure, whether it's Darth Vader or Kylo Ren or any number of other figures, we want our monsters to not be human or not have some kind of abnormal beginning. And I think that saying, hey, look, he was a kid doing kid stuff. I think that gives a different perspective.
It's not that he was a kid. It was just this particular kid. I mean, I'm not trying to be an asshole about it, Brian. No, come on. I mean, am I wrong?
Well, no, absolutely. And I think, honestly, Brian, I think Seth was sort of making the opposite point to what you were responding to, because he's saying, like, why would Obi-Wan be, you know, selling Anakin as this great guy when he is, in fact, a child massacrer? So I think, you know, the complaint he was making was more along the lines of the pure evil. I think what we expected was more, you know, I don't know, maybe a more direct split between good Anakin, bad Anakin. But it does make it very hard to square Obi-Wan, you know, in the original trilogy with
speaking so affectionately about the young Anakin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, for what, two movies, the guy looks like he's doing a slow burn. He's got the big vein coming out of his forehead and his eyes are turning blood red. And even Yoda is totally clueless as to who the evil, you know, force, who the mole, who the bad element might be among them. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, everybody but Yoda. Right. Who the problem is. I was screaming at the screen.
I think Kylo Ren actually has a much better story arc in the early phase of his evilness than Anakin Skywalker. I would agree that the arc there goes like this.
Yeah.
I think that in the last two movies, the arc was much better presented. At least the the backstory, it was told in backstory rather than trying to make the arc appear in screen over decades.
I disagree with those who hate Kylo Ren as a character. I think he's fantastic.
Oh, I think he's fantastic too. And that's what I'm saying is yeah. Kylo Ren's arc is being done much better than Anakin Skywalker's was done in the prequels.
I loved Rogue One. Am I the yes. only one?
No, you are not. You are
not.
Okay. No Illusion's going to be the tough sell here. No, yeah, yes, no.
I'd give it a B minus, I guess. I thought it was, I liked it more than I liked The Force Awakens.
Wasn't The Force Awakens? I mean, that's the one criticism of The Force Awakens is it's the same damn story.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the same freaking.
Yeah, it's just fan service. Which, I mean, honestly, after the prequels, I can understand why they wanted to err on the other side and just give you the same damn thing you had before because you know, people felt like so much of that was lacking in the prequels.
I think, too, there was an affection for that film for those of us who were waiting, had waited 30 years. So, you know, it's almost like a callback to 1977 to sort of reinvigorate those feelings. I was glad in Rogue One that they squeezed Forrest Whitaker in. Now, there's a casting decision I would have never called, but I actually kind of bought it. I don't know. Am I wrong?
Anytime you can get Forrest Whitaker into a movie, it's a good thing.
Okay. Yeah, I think thought it was awesome. Well, though.
Well, I thought Rogue One in general was awesome. I mean, you get to the end of the movie, and you know it's coming, and you feel it, and it just happens. And
Rogue One, for me, is all about the payoff. I like Jyn Erso. I find it an interesting story. I like her and I like all the rebels that she teams up with. And it's a fun jaunt. But for me, like, that movie only really hits home for me in those last, you know, 20-ish minutes where we see the Darth Vader and Leia and the culmination that lead up to the opening scene of A New Hope.
I can't get over the fact that they didn't manage to close that movie with Donnie Yen and Darth Vader getting into a lightsaber fight. That seemed like such a waste to me to like throw Darth Vader in there, have this incredibly badass, like 45 seconds of Vader. But how awesome would it have been if we'd gotten an actual, because you needed to kill Donnie Yen off anyway, right? Oh yeah. No, no. God knows we wouldn't want lightsaber battles in a Star Wars movie. Would we, Brian?
Come on. Seriously, I mean, this is coming from the same guy that wanted Luke ripping the legs off the AT-AT. I get it. But.
No, I actually want action in my action movies. I know. I apologize.
Yeah, not too much thinking. We wouldn't want that.
You are hearing why I invited both of these guys to participate, because they're both such wallflowers. They never speak their mind. Come out of your shell, man. Say what you're thinking, really. Real fast before we close it up. Anybody who's been patiently waiting on hold or whatever, anybody want to chime in with anything real fast?
Anyone else think it's weird that if we go straight from Rogue One to A New Hope, that Darth Vader basically just saw Leia fly away, but she tries to make it out as if, you know, she's been on the other side of the galaxy the whole time. Does anyone else think that's a little weird now?
I'm trying to remember. Did he actually see her at the end of Rogue One?
No, but he saw her ship flying away.
Yeah,
and I feel like there's probably enough of a connection there that he's like, wait a minute,
Wars. He's like, if this is a consular ship, where's the ambassador? Finally, what do you think of these allegations that those of us who criticize the Star Wars films, those of us who are not, say, 15? We're just bitchy because we're not 15 anymore and that, you know, we're trying to recreate our youth. You think there's some truth to that? You think we're just becoming sort of curmudgeons and we're just harder to please because the magic may not be quite there the way it was? Or you think that's just a dodge?
I think it's a little bit different than that. I think that the movies themselves are aimed at a new generation of fans. They're not really aimed so much at us. I mean, maybe to an extent, we're not getting it as well as we might have got it when we saw the original series. But by the same token, maybe we aren't supposed to get it as much.
I agree that we're not supposed to like these new movies. I agree with Brian. Well, we finally found a point that we can agree on.
No, I don't think that's what he said.
No, it's not.
My friends, I appreciate the spirited conversation. Star Wars seems to be the universal language. Almost everybody speaks it. Anybody here speak Trek as well? Star Wars and Star Trek? Yeah.
Don't get me started.
I'm sorry, guys. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of Star Trek Beyond, but I loved the J.J. Abrams reboot, the first.
Oh, yes.
The 2009 film. I just thought was fantastic. And they pulled off nearly the impossible, which was to reinvent these iconic characters that were so cemented in my mind. I bought it. I took the journey. Didn't care much for Into Darkness, but boy, I thought the first one was magic. So.
I'm a big fan of everything Star Trek, except not so much DS9.
Or The Final Frontier. Spock should never sing around a campfire. This should never happen.
But The Final Frontier is the movie we don't speak of.
That's right. It's the relative that never comes to the family reunions, and we're kind of glad for that. Yeah, that's good to know. Appreciate everybody who's been involved. Lots of fun. A nice distraction to kick off the new year. We'll let the debate continue in the comments sections as skeptics talk Star Wars. You guys be good. Great talking to you.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.